The images from the past couple of days at the airport have been heartbreaking.
But that is not the end of that sentence. It's Thursday, August 19th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, a warning by the UN about Afghanistan. We hear from U.S. soldiers who serve there. Children are the target of a COVID variant. Many in the U.S. to be offered another dose of COVID vaccine. And from migrants to millionaires, it is all on today's VOA Asia. President Joe Biden is facing mounting pressure over the chaotic withdrawal of American forces in Afghanistan and the swift collapse of the government in Kabul. White House correspondent Patsy Wittikaswara reports.
Chaotic scenes of desperate Afghans trying to flee the country underscored what is widely perceived as the Biden administration's poorly planned exit from America's longest war.
The images from the past couple of days at the airport have been heartbreaking. But President Biden had to think about the human cost of the alternative path as well, which was to stay in the middle of a civil conflict in Afghanistan.
Following the Taliban's swift recapture of Afghanistan, the U.S. is scrambling to evacuate thousands of Americans and Afghan allies.
We are prioritizing a number of groups. American citizens, embassy employees and their families, our locally employed staff, SIV holders and applicants, Afghans who would be eligible for P1, P2 refugee programs, which includes, by the way, translators who may have assisted media organizations and others.
By Tuesday evening, officials said the U.S. has evacuated more than 3,200 people, including U.S. embassy personnel, American, Afghan, and third country citizens. In addition, the U.S. has relocated nearly 2,000 Afghan special immigrants to the United States. The administration is negotiating with the Taliban to continue the evacuation at least until the end of August.
The Taliban have informed us that they are prepared to provide the safe passage of civilians to the airport, and we intend to hold them to that commitment.
On Tuesday, the Taliban conducted their first news conference since seizing control. Appearing in public for the first time, spokesperson Zabihullah Mujahid vowed Afghanistan would not become a terrorist haven and guaranteed the rights of women based on Sharia. He said the Taliban would provide amnesty to those who fought against them and establish an inclusive government.
We don't want more war. We want peace in Afghanistan, and that's why talks have taken place.
With the Taliban's violent past, many are questioning whether the vows are genuine. Securing the Taliban's cooperation in the safe evacuation of American citizens and Afghan allies will be a key test for the Biden administration.
If it looks like there's a series of competent processes going forward in all of these issues, and other issues like dealing with the possible future threat of terrorism, for example, dealing with how does the region come together on an ongoing long-term basis, what's our long-term strategy, I think that you can reestablish a credible image, both at home and abroad, but it's going to take hard work and concrete results.
Biden left the presidential retreat at Camp David early to return to the White House Tuesday evening. He is facing anger from both Republican and Democratic lawmakers who have pledged to investigate the bungled Afghan withdrawal, Biden's biggest foreign policy crisis so far. Patsy Wittikaswara, VOA News at the White House.
In the eastern Afghanistan city of Jalalabad, a health official said on Wednesday that at least one person was killed and six others wounded when the Taliban violently broke up a protest. Dozens of people had gathered to raise the national flag a day before Afghanistan's Independence Day, which commemorates the end of British rule in 1919. They lowered the Taliban flag, a white banner with an Islamic inscription that the militants have raised in the areas they captured. Here's what happened. Video footage later showed the Taliban firing into the air and attacking people with batons to disperse the crowd. The violence comes as the militant group meets with former officials from the toppled Western-backed government. Stay with us as we continue our coverage on the takeover Afghanistan on VOA Asia. These are some of the stories you'll find at voanews.com. China says it is ready to work with the Taliban. Race to become Malaysia's next PM heats up as the deadline looms. Four members of a Hong Kong University student union arrested Wednesday on accusations of advocating terrorism. More than 100 Australians boarded a special repatriation flight from Bali on Wednesday, organized by the Australian government, as COVID-19 cases in the Indonesian resort hotspot remained high. A 2021 Japanese Grand Prix race has been canceled following discussions between the government and race promoters. That as Japan continues to battle a months-long COVID-19 case spike. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Ira Melman. United Nations agencies are appealing to states not to abandon the Afghan people in the midst of their country's unfolding humanitarian crisis, but to offer protection and asylum to those in need. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
More than 500,000 Afghans who have fled their homes this year because of conflict and insecurity remain displaced inside the country. So far, few people have fled across borders as refugees seeking international protection. But the UN Refugee Agency says this could change at any time. It warns of a potential mass exodus given the dangerously fluid and uncertain situation prevailing under the country's new Taliban rulers. UNHCR spokeswoman Shabia Mantu says many Afghans, fearful for their lives, might decide to seek international protection abroad.
UNHCR remains concerned about the risk of human rights violations against civilians in this evolving context, including for women and girls, those perceived to have a current or past association with the Afghan government, international organizations, or with international military forces. States have a legal and moral responsibility to allow those fleeing Afghanistan to seek safety and to not forcibly return refugees.
In the wake of the rapidly deteriorating security and human rights situation in Afghanistan, the UNHCR is calling on states to keep their borders open to Afghans fleeing persecution and violence. It also is appealing to states to not forcibly return Afghan nationals, including rejected asylum seekers, to their country where their lives might be in danger. The UNHCR welcomes recent steps taken by 9 European countries to temporarily halt deportations of failed asylum seekers. The agency also praises Pakistan and Iran for their decades-long generosity in sheltering millions of Afghan refugees. The UN Human Rights Office agrees the safety of Afghan civilians, particularly at-risk groups, are of paramount importance. Agency spokesman Rupert Colville says his office has received chilling reports of human rights abuses and of restrictions on the rights of individuals, especially women and girls. These violations, he says, reportedly have occurred in some parts of the country captured by Taliban insurgents over the past few weeks.
Member states need to use their influence with the Taliban bilaterally and multilaterally to protect civilian lives. States have a duty to use any leverage they have to de-escalate the situation and install calm and ensure protection of at-risk groups.
The Taliban have made statements described by observers as encouraging in recent days. These include a pledge of amnesty for those who have worked for the previous government, as well as assurances that women can work and girls can go to school. All pledges, the Taliban says, would be within Islamic law. Colville says only time will tell whether the Taliban will honor their promises, whether their actions will match their words. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, a Singapore court sentenced a British man to 6 weeks in prison Wednesday, according to local media, after he repeatedly breached coronavirus protocols by refusing to wear a face mask in public. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are very happy you're with us on VOA Asia. We continue our coverage of the crisis in Afghanistan. In 2002, VOA's Kane Farabaugh, then a reporter for the American military, interviewed numerous U.S. service members during a visit to Afghanistan in the early stages of what became a nearly 20-year presence in the country. Recently, as the country fell to the Taliban, Farabaugh followed up with some of the people he had met, now veterans of America's longest war.
As he watches circumstances in Afghanistan unfold on the TV at his home in Missouri, veteran Steve Hutcherson is in shock.
It's difficult to watch. I mean, you've seen the old videos of the fall of Saigon and everything, and it's kind of eerily similar, you know, that we spent so much in human lives and national treasure to maintain what we have. And then you see it all gone just in a flash.
Afghanistan's return to Taliban control is a personal setback for Hutcherson.
Flash 64, Roger, maintain VFR.
He was among the first wave of uniformed U.S. military forces sent to the country in early 2002, working as an air traffic controller at Bagram Airfield, coordinating Allied aircraft in combat and support missions aimed at eliminating terrorists. He believes the U.S. met its objective.
All we can say that we know for sure is the result, and the result was that we've been safe for the last 20 years.
But he also thinks the U.S. effort to build a democratic Afghan nation was an unwinnable war.
You're trying to fight an idea. You don't fight an idea, you know, with weapons and stuff.
I guess the shocking part to me is how quickly everything happened.
Rhonda Lawson watched the rapid fall of the Afghan government from her home in Maryland. Nearly 20 years ago, her home had been Bagram Airfield, serving as a non-commissioned officer for a U.S. Army Mobile Public Affairs Detachment. In Afghanistan, she witnessed U.S. efforts to train a new Afghan National Army.
It does kind of change my view as to whether the Afghan National Army was prepared to defend their own country. I don't know if it was a case of them not fighting or them failing, but for the Taliban to have taken over as quickly as they did, like I said, it was quite shocking.
If they don't want to fight for themselves, we can't stay there forever.
After 20 years, I don't think we necessarily need to have U.S. military forces on the ground there.
Dan Milbauer served in different U.S. Army units during two deployments to Afghanistan, which allowed him to travel extensively in the country while there.
A place like Afghanistan has historically been problematic. The Soviets tried, we tried, you know, we've tried for 20 years now. If the Taliban rises to power again, there's a reason for that, and we'll respond as we feel appropriate in the future.
With the Taliban now seemingly in control of Afghanistan's uncertain future, the exodus of those seeking safety elsewhere and still have the means to flee continues. Kane Farabaugh, VOA News, Chicago.
You can get the latest information on the situation in Afghanistan 24 hours a day at voanews.com and all of our social media platforms.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. The death toll as a result of Myanmar's February 1st coup passed 1,000 Wednesday, according to an official of the Assistance Association of Political Prisoners activist group, which has been recording killings by security forces. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Students in the United States are returning to class for a new school year just as the number of Delta variant COVID-19 cases increases around the country. Experts say children seem to be more vulnerable to this variant, raising questions about how to protect students, especially those who are too young to be vaccinated. Daria Dikatz reports.
Since the coronavirus pandemic hit the U.S., over 36 million Americans have been infected, about 4 million of them children, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics. after a relatively calm few months, the Delta variant is causing new surge of cases just as children are returning to class for the new school year. Dr. William Raska is with the University of Vermont Medical Center.
Nobody under the age of 12 has been immunized. So by definition, there's a huge susceptible population.
The most difficult situation, experts say, can be seen in the South, where vaccination rates are low and the Delta variant is spreading especially fast. Also, a number of governors in states such as Florida, Texas, and Arizona have banned mask mandates, although some school districts reportedly are defying those orders.
If schools go into the school year without masking and stay unmasked from, say, September to December, they will infect most of the kids that attend school. It's that transmissible. It's much more transmissible than it was last year.
Dr. Danny Benjamin, a distinguished professor of pediatrics at Duke University, participated in three studies looking at the impact of face masks on the spread of COVID-19 in schools.
And we studied over 1 million children and adults this past spring with no distancing, 3 children to a bus seat, schools open full time for everyone. And again, the chance of a child infecting somebody else at school once, if they came to school with COVID, was 1% or less.
But those who oppose face mask mandates argue such orders violate their freedom and that wearing a face mask is a matter of personal choice and responsibility. Many others have expressed distrust of the government and its claims the vaccines are safe. Meanwhile, experts say getting more people vaccinated is key to controlling the virus.
If we vaccinate the community, then the schools are safe. And then when the schools open, obviously we should try to vaccinate all our children age 12 and older. They're still not well vaccinated.
With the fast spread of the Delta variant, the American Academy of Pediatrics has already encouraged healthcare regulators to approve the use of COVID vaccines for children aged 5 to 11 as soon as possible. And approval is not expected for a few more months. Daria Degutz for VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA Asia. Making headlines in Asia, Indonesia Wednesday launched a pilot project to convert motorcycles that run on combustion engines into electric-powered vehicles, all part of a national drive to make transport more environmentally friendly, that according to the Energy Ministry there. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. U.S. regulators have approved an extra dose of the COVID-19 vaccination for transplant recipients and others with weakened immune systems. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The Food and Drug Administration has approved booster shots for millions of Americans who are especially vulnerable to the coronavirus because of organ transplants, certain cancers, and other health conditions. Centers for Disease Control Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky says emerging data show it works.
There's an enhanced antibody response after an additional dose of an mRNA COVID-19 vaccine in some immunocompromised people.
Several other countries, including France and Israel, have similar recommendations. The boosters are only for this high-risk group, about 3% of U.S. adults. For the rest of the population, so far the vaccines seem to be providing protection without an extra dose, although that is being monitored. I'm Jackie Quinn.
New Zealand's city streets were largely deserted on Wednesday as the country returned to life in lockdown for the first time in 6 months in a bid to halt any spread of the infectious Delta variant of COVID-19. Gloria Tsou has more.
New Zealand's city streets were largely deserted Wednesday morning as the country returns to life under lockdown. After months of living virus-free, New Zealand confirmed its first case of the highly contagious Delta variant in Auckland on Tuesday. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said Wednesday there were now at least 10 confirmed cases, including a fully vaccinated nurse from Auckland Hospital. She added that they are all linked to an original infection from just across the water.
The second thing it tells us is that it is linked
the current genome sequencing of cases in the New South Wales outbreak. Our case has originated in Australia.
Most of the country will be under level 4 lockdown, the highest alert level, for at least 3 days, while Auckland will stay under lockdown for a week. Panic buying erupted after it was announced on Tuesday, while schools and businesses scrambled to move online. New Zealand's last reported community case of COVID-19 was in February. Its citizens have been living without restrictions, although its borders remain largely sealed. Ardern has been praised for New Zealand's strict virus containment measures, but her popularity took a hit with the delayed vaccine rollout. Only a fifth of the country's 5 million people have been fully vaccinated so far.
That was Reuters reporter Gloria Tso. We continue on VOA Asia. Sisters Rosie and Donna Khalif arrived in the U.S. with their family in the mid-1980s after fleeing conflict in Lebanon. After graduating from college, they started a box subscription service to encourage kids to put down gadgets and engage in the real world. Before long, the small company was worth millions. Maxim Maskalkov has more.
Today, Rosie Khalif is a successful entrepreneur and business consultant. But she and her family got off to a rocky start in America after migrating from their native Lebanon in the mid-1980s.
My mom opened the envelope and it said, "Congratulations, you have won the United States Green Card Lottery." And from that moment, our whole life changed, truly. I mean, there's four of us. We all went to college. Many of us had even beyond. My brother's a lawyer. Donna went to Harvard Business School.
But their life in the U.S. began in a tiny apartment. The children slept on inflatable mattresses. Khalif says the family grew even closer during those difficult years.
I mean, it was just immigrant life, right? It was just what you had to do to get by. My dad worked two jobs. My mom worked two jobs. As soon as my siblings could start working, they started working. I mean, just hard workers that really were able to create something for themselves.
Khalif's father is an artist. With no money to spare for toys, he found another way to make the kids' days more colorful, literally. And that creativity inspired Khalif and her sister Dana to start a business called Surprise Ride.
He kind of created those projects for us that would give us a break from life. They would teach us things. We would do experiments with him. That really was part of the reason for us starting Surprise Ride. We realized that kids today are growing up glued to their screens without this creative outlet that we know is so valuable.
Surprise Ride is a box subscription service. Each month, the company sends a package that contains a different surprise project for children. Their business idea was selected out of thousands to be pitched on Shark Tank, a popular business accelerator TV show. The young entrepreneurs presented their product to the investors on the show, but they never closed the deal.
And we weren't sure if our business was going to survive. We weren't sure if we had the right capital. We didn't have the right advisors. And it was a shocking moment of, did we just make the biggest mistake of our life, not closing that deal? And then we just went back to the office and got straight to work, like we always do.
But their exposure on the TV show led to skyrocketing sales. The sisters sold over $500,000 worth of their boxes in just one weekend. And later they began working with another investor and selling at retail stores. In 2021, they decided to sell their company and try something new.
And now that we've, you know, grew that company to millions of sales and thousands of customers, and we sold it, we feel a sense of responsibility to give back and to women founders, to immigrants, because I think they also don't quite know what is needed to raise capital and to grow their businesses.
The Khalif sisters help put together presentations for investors and advise customers over the phone. They're also working on a non-profit organization to help level the playing field for business newcomers. Maxim Moskolkov for VOA News, McLean, Virginia.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. And you can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, Chris Casqueo, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.